This is a very well-known passage of all of us, so I suppose I'm not going to be introducing you to anything new. But there's a few different ways as to preach this passage. I realized just last night as I was preparing to preach it that I've preached it a few times already. It's a very dear passage to me. And I was thinking, if I was ever to preach it in a church setting where I'm a pastor, would I preach it just in one sermon? I probably wouldn't, because it's such a rich passage that 2, 3, maybe 4, 5, 6 sermons wouldn't be enough just to explain and show all the deep treasures hidden in this passage. There's the whole biblical theology of coming from the Old Testament of the Lord rejoicing. When it talks about the celebration of the father, or the celebration of the woman who lost her coin when she found it, all these themes of celebration, it's beautiful. But yet, I have 20, 30, 40 minutes to explain it to you. So I'm just going to focus on that one aspect. I think this passage is full of surprises. Jesus, when he told this story, he wanted to shock people into paying attention to what he was saying. It's not a mere story that it's super relatable. There's some relatable... The story can be relatable, but there's surprising facts in the story that show something about the character of God, that shows something about the character of who Jesus is. So we're going to be looking at it from the perspective of the listeners. So the invitation I have for you this morning is that we get in a time machine and go back to Jesus' day, and we sit down at Jesus' feet and we imagine ourselves as Jews listening to this sermon, to this parable. And we see what Jesus is telling them. That's my invitation for you. The story, the parable, comes from a very particular situation. Verse 1 and 2 tells us the context of this parable. He says that when all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to Jesus to hear him. And the Pharisee and scribes complained, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." If nothing else, this verse, "this man receives sinners," should bring you happiness and comfort to the heart. Jesus, he receives sinners. So he receives you. He receives me. He eats with us. He's with arms wide open, wanting to receive us and to have fellowship with us. If only we come to him. But then there's this group of people. They're called the Pharisees and the scribes, complaining. So who are they? Who are the Pharisees and the scribes? I suppose many of you know, but let me just quickly say it for those of you that don't know. The Pharisees were a religious group. They were not priests. They were not like the priests. They were not a priestly class. They were regular folk, like you and me. But they were very religious. They thought that they wanted to keep the purity of the land. So you know that when Israel was taken into captivity and returned, this group, they were set up. They started gathering together as a police that would keep the purity of the land. They wanted to keep everything according to the law, so that the Israel would not be taken away into captivity again. That's relatable, isn't it? We don't want our churches to become impure. I think we in a sense, we can relate to the Pharisees, can't we? We want our churches to be pure and to stay in the straight and narrow and not to deviate into worldliness. That was what the Pharisees wanted. But in the process of defending it, we'll find out in the process of doing this, they forgot about the most important thing that was the people that were in their days. They were supposed to love the people, and they were not loving them. The scribes were the religious elite also, like the lawyers, the experts in the law. They were the ones that studied the law, that understood the law. So these two people groups were complaining to Jesus, were complaining about Jesus. This man receives sinners. He's having lunch with the tax collectors. The tax collectors were this is the third group, maybe I should explain. The tax collectors were Israelites, Jews. They were of the nation of Israel. But yet they were in bed with the Roman Empire, with the governor of Judea, and they were collecting taxes for the Roman Empire. You can see how they were not making many friends. We have this empire that invaded us and is oppressing us. And some of us are in bed with the enemy. So the Pharisees, they didn't like them. And probably, you know how these things are. There's nothing new under the sun. Where there's money and power, there's corruption, there's thugs, there's probably prostitution. Tax collectors would probably be surrounded by all sorts of nasty things and people. So they were not like the super well thought of kind of people. But Jesus was sitting with them and eating with them. So the Pharisees were complaining to Jesus. You know, the Pharisees, they forgot all those passages that we read in just before the sermon. The passage in Isaiah that talks about the Lord rejoicing as a bridegroom rejoices over his bride. As the Lord rejoicing over a sinner who repents. The Pharisees forgot about it. The Pharisees forgot about the passage in Zephaniah, about the rejoicing of the Lord in the salvation of his people. But Jesus didn't. And so he brings this to their attention. It starts by saying two parables. You know them. The parable of the shepherd, the lost sheep, and the parable of the lost coin. Another thing. Jesus, he's always doing two, three different things when he's telling these parables. He's always trying to touch on two, three different subjects when he's telling these parables. And you suppose that when Jesus is calling himself the shepherd who is searching for the lost sheep, that the Pharisees, they know the story of Ezekiel. They know the passage we read from Ezekiel earlier, that the shepherd who seeks out the sheep is God. But here is Jesus saying he is the shepherd who seeks out the sheep. I don't think it's coincidental. I think Jesus is saying something here. He's calling himself God, even in telling this story. And that's why the Pharisees hate him as well. Because he seeks out the sinners, and he puts himself in the place of God, calling himself the shepherd who seeks the sheep, calling himself the father, portraying himself like a father in the parable. So he tells them these parables. But then we get to the parable of the lost son, this beautiful parable. And he says that, then, verse 11, then he said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give to me the portion of goods that falls to me. This is an unusual request, brothers. Brothers and sisters, if you're a Jew living, even today, they don't need to go back for this. You don't ask these kind of things from your father. At best, you're being disrespectful. At worst, you're telling your father, Father, I want you dead. You're as good as dead to me. Give me my portion. There's no respect here. And you know how Jewish culture works, don't you? It's Eastern culture. You know the Muslims nowadays are still very much like that. You don't shame your family. There's Eastern culture and Western culture, basically. And I'm not saying one is better than the other. Don't get me wrong in this sermon. Eastern culture is a very shame-oriented, shame and honor-oriented kind of culture, isn't it? You, whatever is honorable to your family, to your religion, to your city or nation, you do. Whatever is shameful, you don't do. That's why even today when Muslims get converted, young Muslims get converted, They run the risk of being killed by their own families. They run the risk of being killed by their own families because They're bringing shame to their families. Western culture, our culture, although this is rapidly changing, is a guilt culture. It's a culture that's oriented more towards guilt. You don't do things that make you feel guilty. We don't like as individuals to feel guilty. So I'm not saying this one is better than this one, but they're different. But this story is getting told to a shame culture. It's getting told to a culture that's very focused on honoring and not shaming their family. So when this younger son is asking this from his father, you can be sure that the Pharisees are listening very intently. And they're understanding what is happening. This younger son is being disrespectful. You don't ask these kind of things from your father. This is a very unusual request. Father, give me my portion of the inheritance. You wait for your turn. I've worked for these things. Don't force it. But he's kind of like being disrespectful. I honestly think Jesus telling this story is telling it in a sense that, Father, I want you that. You're as good as that to me. Give me my portion of the inheritance. But more than this, more than the unusual request, there's an unusual answer. You'd suppose that the father would say, no, you're crazy. Go back to your place. You silly brat. No, the father says, yes, okay, here you go. Take your portion. Go. Do whatever you want with it. The Pharisees wouldn't be liking this. So he divided to them the livelihood. As a younger son, he would get slightly less than the older brother. But this is not usual. But okay, let's carry on with the story. So now the younger son has what he wants. What do you suppose a younger son, a good Jewish younger son, should do with it? Maybe buy a house? Maybe find a nice Jewish girl, get married, start a family, start some businesses. No. Verse 13. Not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and journeyed to a far country. And then there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. He abandoned the father's house. You'll be shocked to find out that this story has more surprises coming. What does he do? Not many days after, he gathers all together. Those times are not like our times. Our times, we have all our money or most of our personal finances in bank accounts. And even if we don't have, it's very quick to just move money around. But in those times, people didn't have that much money. Your personal riches would be accounted for in cattle, in lands, in all sorts of things. Even money, but money would be a small part of the riches. So when the father divided with the son all his riches and gave him his inheritance, he gave him land, he gave him cattle, he gave him all of those kind of things that need a whole logistical effort to move around. And Jesus says, this is what the Pharisees listen. Not many days after, he gathered all together. What do you think he did with all those things? He sold them. He just gathered together all that he could, sold whatever he could sell quickly. And when you sell quickly, you sell cheaply. That's just how markets work even in those days. If you want to get rid of something really quickly, you sell it cheap so that people will buy it. This is basically the son disregarding all the work of his father. What does he do next? He gathers all together. He goes to a far country. Again, brothers, Jews, they don't like, especially in those times, nowadays it's different, but especially in those times, Jewish people, they didn't like to go to far countries, to foreign countries. They loved their lands. Their lands is where they wanted to be. Israel was the holy land. But he journeyed to a far country, to a foreign country. If you're a Pharisee listening to this story, you're starting to get annoyed with all of this. But there's still more to come. But he journeyed to a far country. And there he wasted his possessions with wasteful, prodigal living. The idea here is He goes to a far country, something a Jewish boy wouldn't do, and he wastes everything. And he didn't waste just a little bit. We know from the rest of the story that the father was a very wealthy man. He had hired servants. He had possessions. He had lands. He had fatted calves. From the story, this father is a wealthy man, a rich man. He was someone with a lot of possessions. He squandered, some translations say, he squandered his money. He wasted his money. The idea here is he used the money to no purpose at all. He just spent it all, parties. Later on, his older brother, as we just read, will say that he spent his money with prostitutes. By the way, speaking of the older brother, where is he? You suppose in this culture, an older brother would be there to defend the honor of his family, right? That's the role of the older people. If the father is not honoring himself, then someone comes along and makes the family honored. That's what happens in many Muslim countries. It's not if a young girl, Muslim girl, gets converted, usually it's not the father who does the honor killing. Or who does the beatings, or it's an uncle who comes along, it's an older brother. There's a whole hierarchy of things, of people that can come along and defend the honor, but the older brother is just nowhere to be found. We're going to find out why. But he's good with this, at least, isn't he? Anyway, if by now the Pharisees are not rolling their eyes and pulling their hairs off, they're going to be in no time. He wastes his money. Verse 13. And now what happens? But when he had spent all, verse 14, there arose a severe famine in the land, and he began to be in want. Just great. A famine. And brothers, just really quickly, have you ever felt like this? Yeah, sure. The spending all the money is the prodigal son's fault. It's his fault. He spent it all. He wasn't being wise. But the famine, it's not his fault. It's just, it happened. It's a providence of God. But have you ever felt this way? Something wrong happens in your life. You made a bad decision and you think, okay, I need to get back on my feet, and something happens that just throws you down again. I suppose it has happened to you before. You felt like this. This is what's happening to this boy. He spent all his money. Okay, that's his fault. But now a famine happens. And brothers, a famine is nothing like the famines we talk about today. In those times where there was no social security, no ONGs to be found, there's no Red Cross International, no kind of social netting. When a famine happened, it was the poorest of the poor that suffered, and they suffered greatly. There's registers, there's books that talk about these kind of situations. Even the Bible in the Old Testament talks about some of these famines. That when you go hungry like this, you don't have anything else to eat. You start eating your pets, if you have any. You start eating the whatever comes to you. There's even the story of cities getting besieged. You know, when cities get under siege and they don't have any access to food and water. Even cannibalism starts to be a solution. The kind of famine that the Bible talks about is this kind of famine. It's not like we have a 2008 financial crisis and we have to tighten a little bit our belts, maybe reduce a little bit on our expenses. When the Bible talks about famine, when Jesus was telling this story, the Pharisees were listening and they knew what famine was, true famine. So what did the Jewish boy do? Maybe the Pharisees are thinking, well, suits him. Yeah, he deserves that. Good. That's some divine justice for you right there. But what happens next? He clings himself to one of the rich men of that country. Verse 15, then he joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed the swine off. If you're a Jew right now, now is the time where you're really pulling your hair and screaming, where is this story going to end? No good Jewish boy would join himself to a foreign and be a slave to a foreign. We're prideful. We're a prideful nation. We're the elect people of God. We're not slaves to anyone. But he joined himself to a citizen of that country. And not only that, he's feeding the swine. You know, the Old Testament talks about eating, it's no good eating swine. Jesus is just painting the worst and worst picture. The more this story goes, it just goes, where is this going to end? If you're a Pharisee listening to it, you're getting crazy with it right now. But it gets worse. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. Can you imagine the picture that Jesus is painting here? There's this boy, Jewish boy, reaching to the pig feeder and looking at it and wanting to feed for him. Not only was he feeding swine, working with swine, he was becoming one. He became one in this story. The picture that Jesus paints is the worst of the worst. Jesus is just sentence after sentence trying to show how depraved this boy is. But then there's a good side of the story. But when he came to himself, verse 17, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have plenty? How many of have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger? Finally, you say, finally he came to his senses. And this has some truth here for us today, even today, brothers. Hardships and struggles, tribulations, difficulties in our lives, if we're truly of the Lord, they're not meant to punish us. They're meant to bring us to our senses. Like a good father, sometimes God needs to chastise us. Is that the correct word? He needs to chastise us into seeing him and into looking to him. So the question is, are you going through hardships right now? If you are, and if you're truly God's, look to him. Look to him.